Everyone needs a little help, even if you have trouble admitting it. You need sales help. It doesn't matter how long you've been in sales. The more you learn, the more you earn. If your sales need help, it's time to consider the Gittimer Learning Academy. It's the fun and easy way to brush up on sales fundamentals and learn new advanced strategies to close your next deal. We've got hundreds of hours of lessons on closing, referrals, prospecting. It's like Jeffrey sitting there right next to you, helping you close your next deal. You won't find a more comprehensive library of sales knowledge that you can actually use. Go to GittimerLearningAcademy.com and sign up for a free demo. Did I mention it's free? Free demo. I like free.
Jen.
Hey, Jeffrey.
You know, I was on iTunes yesterday and I'm pissed.
Why are you pissed?
They deleted some of our stuff because it's, quote, too old.
It's because we produce so many episodes. Oh. They only keep a certain amount. I don't know what that amount is.
So here's the deal.
Yeah.
I talked to Doug, I talked to Nada, and we are going to get some of those episodes back because they were classic.
Love it.
And we're going to set them out again so that our diehards can take advantage of that wisdom that seemingly is off the air, but it's not.
Well, let's do it right now, like with this episode.
Cool. Let's
go. All right. Take a listen.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sell or Die podcast, the global premier personal development and sales podcast on the planet. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling and my newest book, The Sales Manifesto.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, author of Sales in a New York Minute. We are interviewing leaders in business, sales, and personal development to give you the strategies it takes to make more sales and make more money.
Strategies that you can take out into the street and turn into money 1 minute after you hear them.
In a manifesto moment?
Well, no, more like in a New York Minute.
Oh, thank you to all the diehards out there supporting us with listens and five-star reviews.
Be a star on Sell or Die. Leave your own review. Come on. Go to your computer right now. Go to iTunes right now and write down, type down, talk down exactly how you feel about this podcast and how it might affect others.
All right. I want you to enjoy today's show. Take notes and tell us what you think on our Sell or Die Hard official Facebook group.
All right, let's get to it. It's time to sell or die. So we have a big question. What does the C in Richard C. Wilson stand for?
Carol.
Oh, no wonder you don't say Richard Carroll.
Yeah, it was my grandpa's name. So,
cool. Yep. So it's a family name.
And family name.
You're in Florida. Did you grow up in Florida or did you grow up someplace else?
No, I grew up in Oregon. And then, at one point the business, took off and I looked around and said, I live in Oregon where you can buy a house for about $20,000. So why am I working so hard if I'm not living in this rainy place with no family offices? And I said, well, let's move somewhere tropical and, has more family offices and actually makes me want to get out of bed in the morning and keep working hard.
Where did you live in Oregon?
In Portland, Oregon. It was actually in the Orinco Station area by the Intel headquarters.
Yeah, cool. I love the Oregon coast. It's mm-hmm. one of the coolest places on the planet.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah,
to visit.
Nice. Dungeness crab. Yeah, exactly. Dungeness crab and smoked salmon. What else could you want in the world? Yeah, so you now live in the Miami metropolitan area. What have you found is the difference family business-wise?
There's just so many more family offices here. The way to describe it best in a sentence is that in Oregon, I ran my business there for 6 years, and I met one family office that's based in Portland, Oregon. I moved here to South Florida, and in the 3 years since I've moved here, I've met over 50 that live here locally. And just at the average three-year-old's birthday party I go to, there'll be two or three family offices at the birthday party of, my three-year-old friend's parents, so I don't even have to try. And I make friends with family offices. And like you say, all else equal, life is not fair and people do business with their friends, right? So It helps.
Yeah. So it's strategic to have a three-year-old kid these days.
Define for our audience, what is a family office?
Sure. It's basically just a more holistic way to be managing your wealth if you're worth $10 million, $50 million, $300 million. So for example, if you made a 1% mistake on your taxes, but you're only worth $100,000, you know, who cares? And you probably made several of them and still who cares? But if you're worth $100 million and you make a 1% mistake,
yeah,
that could pay for a full-time team. And the people who are worth $100 million are being clawed at by everyone in the world. Their team needs them. People are trying to sell them things. They have commitments. They have assets. They have boats and houses. And they are more likely to make mistakes because of the complexity and the lack of time they have to do things holistically and carefully in every part of their life.
So the family office is basically making certain that the assets that you have, that you've compiled over the over a lifetime, are not only protected, but they are in growth mode so that they can become a double, you know,
for
double,
the next generation.
Yeah.
So this is interesting, Richard. So you're protecting them from people that want to sell them things that maybe they don't need. How do you sell someone on a service that protects people from people who sell things?
One thing is I listen very, very closely. So if I was to sit down with Jeffrey and say, and ask him 60 questions and more questions based on that, it might come out that he's interested in buying apartment buildings in Charlotte or in an
area.
How about
a home in France?
Or a home in France, if it fits his goals. And so listening to the client a lot and then building a compass of where they want to go and why and their backstory and their values and objectives. And that way, the only ideas that are shown to them is the ones that make it through that filter. And for many people, it's where they made their money, like buying companies that are in the sales industry. So you can relate to it. You have a knowledge advantage, connection advantage, relationship advantage. But then usually there's a real estate component too, which has to be aligned with the risk parameters, the timeline of when they want to be passing on assets or liquidating assets or paying for college, et cetera.
Is there a life insurance aspect of it too?
For sure. And most importantly, it's upgrading their service provider so that, you know, your life insurance agent doesn't see you as your a one whale client and he has all lower end clients because he won't be designing a practical approach for you. And same with a lawyer, same with, you know, accounting and back office administration. You need family office quality people in each spot, or they'll be holding you back, or you'll be wasting a lot of money.
So you select the provider, you may not be the provider.
Right. We actually don't provide any of that. We know national law firms, national accounting firms that serve hundreds of family offices. So you might have grown up with a CPA and he knows your business very, very well. You might not get rid of him. He could still do your bookkeeping or your accounting or part of your payroll, but you might want someone helping you with trust and estates or tax structuring or more complicated issues that have to do with like a family office level organization.
Got it. Hmm. I don't know that I was familiar with the family office concept.
I sort of grew up around it in New York City. So
Wasn't called a family office for me. Just different nomenclature.
That's fair.
Sure.
Is that something that has appeared over the past 100 years or the past 10 years?
Over the past 20, 25 years, the term has become more popular, but especially the last 5 years. You know, I started 11 years ago, but just last year, there was a billionaire based in New York who made his money in real estate. And I was talking to him here in Miami, and he had never heard the word family office before in his whole life. And he lives in Manhattan in the real estate space. So you'd think for sure he would have, you know? So I think a lot of people have not heard of the term, especially if they don't live in the U.S. Or
no, I don't feel so bad.
Yeah.
So how do you build enough trust even to have that initial conversation? Because these people already have or think that they have their people.
Right. And they're on guard. People who have lots of money.
Oh, totally on guard, especially if you're trying to talk to them about their money. So how do you even begin that conversation to get your foot in the door?
I mean, somebody from Goldman Sachs came in and they said, how do we hunt down more family offices? And I said, well, you don't. You have to attract them to
right.
you
Good.
And be the Excedrin for their migraines.
Yeah.
So I just look for different flavors of migraines, knee pain, et cetera. And then we try to create the different color pills for that so that they are coming to me as an authority person and they're cold calling me and emailing me.
And so what do you do to attract them?
So one thing as simple as you know, I started out not very intelligent about how to navigate the family office space. I wrote a book called The Family Office Book, and I wrote it for Wiley so I could feel credible. Then I realized the only book sales were done by me. So I wrote a book called The Single Family Office. And I was like, okay, no one's written a book on that topic before. So I'll be the first one to do it and interview 30 single family offices, which grew my credibility, my connections. But then I got smarter and said, well, the people who don't have as many gatekeepers and they just had a liquidity event are the most valuable, and I can add the most valuable to them, value to them. So I wrote a book with a very simple title, How to Start a Family Office. And no one else on planet Earth, I guess, bothered to put in, you know, a few weekends of work to write a book on that topic. And so now when you search that on Google, you'll find my book, and we're able just to have a one-to-one match with that intent of someone wanting to do that and then providing them value. And then they lean in and want to potentially work together in some way. So that's why I was excited to do this podcast, because my business literally would not exist without, you know, Gittimer's materials. And I read your stuff back when I was in college, and I went to your events back when I was in college. And there was one line in one of your books where you said, I'll give away my best secret of all, out of all my books, the most powerful thing I could tell anybody. And none of you guys are going to follow it, and none of my competitors are going to follow it. So I'll just tell you, you know, is to give away value consistently every month, every week, be giving away value. And in a year or two, you'll be a local expert. 2 to 4 years, you'll be a regional expert. And in 5-7 years, you're going to be a global expert. And I remember reading that, and I said, I'm going to be the son of a bitch that does that. And now I've done it. And I'm here in your podcast.
Cool. That's true.
That's really cool.
That's interesting.
So thank you.
Let me define it more clearly.
Sure.
My marketing mantra, which will appear in no book anyplace, is very simple. I put myself in front of people that can say yes to me, and I deliver value first. And the consistency of that is what wins. You can't do it one time.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tweet out one valuable thing into the world.
It's doing it every day.
When you have 9 followers, right. So
right.
You have to take the perspective that, okay, I'm going to be a value provider. And Richard, one of the reasons that most people won't do it is that they're afraid that they're giving away their secrets, or they're afraid that they're giving away their strategies, and
right.
Then someone else will copy them. They're, you know, like my advice to those audiences, don't flatter yourself. It ain't that good, number one, and it ain't a secret, number two. Just be a value provider, and the world will beat a path to your door.
Right.
I can tell you from your seminars, I've done 2,500 talks in the last 20 years. Never made a sales call. Never made one. And that's a mantra that most people cannot duplicate, because they don't give away enough value. They're trying to make a sales pitch or make a cold call or send a postcard or do something. I don't know what they do.
Right. But, for sure. I also find that sometimes people hesitate and they say, oh, like I was in Monaco speaking at an event, and the lady was like, oh, but I'm so busy. When am I going to have time to write content? And I'm like, well, drink more coffee, or just write for 20 minutes a day during one lunch break on Fridays. Just write for 20 minutes once a week, you know. And lots of people, I find, if they don't have the conviction in their niche or in the space that they want to occupy for the long term, then they don't want to put in that hard work, because they know it's a long-term strategy, and it says a lot about how comfortable and confident they are that they've found what they want to do. And I always tell people, if you're not so confident that if you need 5 years or 10 years to get on top of that sandbox and dominate it, then don't even start. Wait and go after another space that you're so excited about. It doesn't matter how long it takes.
Right.
You know?
Empty parking spaces in Miami Beach. That's a good topic.
Yeah, exactly.
There's only 9 of them.
So what got you so passionate and excited about going after and helping ultra high net worth families in the first place?
So I was raising capital in Boston, and we were cold calling investors, 50 people a day, and it was exhausting, and no one wanted to invest in the managers we represented. I then saw that some of the wealth management firms we were trying to raise capital from called themselves a family office, not very often, but a couple. And I found out that that meant that they had clients that were 10 million net worth or higher, and that they could actually invest in the hedge fund. They could say yes to me. So I said, okay, well, I'm only going to focus on family offices. And I found it very hard to do so, because when I looked online, there was like a random Bloomberg article, a Financial Times article, and literally nothing else. I couldn't learn anything. So what I did was, every time I met with a family office or talked to one, I just selfishly, to teach myself, I'd write about it and put it up on a blog for free. And I did that to teach myself. But then I started getting like 70 hits a day, 400 hits a day, a couple thousand hits a day. and I got on the front page of the Boston Globe. And then I just found that by accident, like I got flown to this European business summit where there was like the prime minister of Turkey on stage during the same conference that I was on stage. And I was 26 years old and they flew me over from Boston. I'm sure when I showed up, they're like, who's this kid? But I had written like, you know, 500 articles on family offices and 500 blog posts. So they just said in their mind, oh, 500 blog posts, you know,
he must be an expert.
He must know everything. Yeah.
Must know something, you know, it must not be a total idiot.
More than the prime minister of Turkey, I can tell you that.
So I just kind of fell into it. You know, I just looked around at that point and said, wow, there's no one else being a helpful trail guide. So I'll just double down on this. And now, you know, a decade later, I'm still one of the youngest people at my own conferences. Like we had a 1,000-person conference last month and, you know, there's probably only 10% of the room that was younger than me. So it's still a little bit awkward that way, but you know, we've learned a lot over the time.
So let's talk a little bit more about these families, because I think that there is something that's not being said here. These people are preyed upon. Mm. It's worse than winning the lottery. Because when you win the lottery, it's like a one-shot deal. These families have been in their communities for years. They might be second or third generation by now. Everyone knows the, you know, the, oh yeah, let's go over to the Smith's house. You know, there, let's trick or treat over there because they have all the money. And let's hit them up for a charitable donation for the Indiana Home for the Criminally Insane Glee Club.
right.
You have to put this into perspective that you are trying to be a sort of a calming force to them, correct?
Right, right. I mean, you're basically helping them say no to almost everything that comes at them. And most likely, unless they've explicitly positioned themselves to attract a type of deal flow that makes sense for their specific strike zone of what they're aiming to do, everything that comes at them is just noise. You know, it's not relevant to where they're trying to go. And that's hard for a lot of people to understand. And a lot of families, because of privacy issues, they don't talk to the public. They don't have a website. They don't communicate to third parties what they do or what they want to invest in. And that really holds them back. So we help a lot of families in having a brand, whether it's a holding company or a family office brand name that's out there that will attract deal flow. Like if you only wanted to buy sales industry related companies and protect someone's private name, you could come up with a family office name that is at sales conferences and has a booth where all these sales software cloud-based companies are at or something like that. And you could be getting great deal flow in the sales niche, but that's light years away from just going to the golf club and then just getting pitched random things by somebody's son who's got some cannabis crypto crazy fund.
Yeah. You know, exactly.
So, you know,
or growing marijuana in Colorado because he's going to make a bloody fortune.
Yeah.
And many do, but you just can't take a deal because the lights are shiny.
Right. For sure. And I think people think they have good deal flow and they really have almost none. And if they haven't done the work of knowing exactly where they want to go and what's the best way to get there while mitigating their downside risk, then they just learn the hard way. They just learn through Braille. And it can be very, very costly to do that.
Braille's hard to read.
Right.
For us. Okay. So we discussed over emails how you went from $220,000 in sales last year in one division to $730,000 so far this year with still a month to go. How did you do that?
Consistently, we've found that whenever a part of our business starts to produce $150,000 or $200,000 a year, we siphon that off and we dedicate a salesperson to grow that channel. And then that's been growing our revenue consistently. Because we find that on average, we bring in $200,000 to $300,000 per employee that we add to the team. Including operational staff, et cetera. And so that was sponsors for our conferences. And we just found that the person who was doing that was also doing many other things in our company. So we just got someone who came from the commercial real estate space who was used to cold calling people all day long. And we told her, you'll never have to cold call again. We have people calling us and emailing us all the time. Just serve them, get back to them the same day, you know, and try to be super helpful to them. And then we tripled our sales in that division by doing that. So it's really just focusing by adding sales talent to areas that maybe were ignored in the past.
So let me define it. It's value out. Someone reads it. Someone responds to it. And when they respond, you respond as quickly as you possibly can
with even more valuable information. And then they decide that you're the person for them. Maybe after two or three or five contacts, they want to hook. They want to hook onto your star. Is that a fair assessment there?
Right.
And I love the word you used, which was serve them.
Yeah.
How do you instill that service mindset?
I instill it by sharing with people that, you know, we've been doing this for 11 years and I'm going to be doing it for the next 20 years. So we want to earn those long.
You're going to work
customers.
20, 11 years? That's way too long.
I mean, it's basically like we don't care about making the short-term money. We want to build long-term value and relationships because this industry is only getting bigger. Mm-hmm. So I'll just be shooting myself in the foot, just trying to squeeze all the juice out of it in 2018, you know? So I just, we communicate that.
Well, if you have 1,000 people at your conference, you got to be doing something right. And I think that you have to look at it and say to yourself, okay, what am I offering this audience that will keep them my audience?
Mm-hmm.
And how do I build it to where next year it's 2,200 because people brought someone with them?
Right, right. I mean, just like you've focused on sales for so long, you know, I heard on someone else's podcast the other day that when Einstein won the Nobel Peace Prize, they said, oh, well, you know, it's so amazing that you discovered relativity. And he said, you know, I didn't discover relativity. I just thought about nothing else for 10 years.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So that's my goal is think about nothing else but family offices. So I just destroy the competition through genuine value contribution to my space. That's a simple, you know, it's a simple business plan.
Yeah. I wonder if your competitors are all twice as old as you are.
They are, for sure. All my competitors are 48 to 62.
Wow, 62. If I ever get that old, I hope they shoot
62. They're about to turn 63, I think, next week. Maybe.
Right.
Yeah, my wife always gets on my case for doing that. But they're older for sure. So, I mean, like Dan, you know, Mr. Sullivan, when I was talking to him the other day, he said, you know, when you can really beat your peers, wait till they're in their 70s. Then you can really run circles around them. And, you know, his point was that, like, sticking to what he's done for so long, like you have, just allows you to, you know, outpace people because they just don't work as hard as consistently in a valuable fashion.
That was an amazing interview.
That was unbelievable. Where the hell was it? It was in the archives, but iTunes forgot to leave it up, and now it's up, and now... But where should our diehards go right now?
All right. If you want more, go to Facebook and search for the Seller Diehards official Facebook group. Or if you really want to get involved in the community, you can go to 2020, the numbers, 2020salesvision.com, and sign up for the waitlist to get into the 2020 Sales Vision group.
And speaking of 20, your investment will be $20.
That's right. It's $20 a month. $20 a month.
Live answers, interactions. It's unbelievable. Go there. Do it now.
It is so much fun. I love it. All right, guys. Peace out.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.